Okay, good morning, 30A students. It is Thursday, October 8th, 8 a.m. And today we're doing activity four, writing formulas and names. So we're continuing on this theme of doing nomenclature. That is a lot of what this lab is about as well. And so you can see that we put in a lot of repetition for the nomenclature because the nomenclature is more difficult to memorize and it's a memorization thing. And it requires repetition in order to really get that nomenclature down. And so let me show you the activity. Let me start a screen share. We'll screen share with, I think, let's start with the iPad. Okay, so activity names and formulas is in module 4, and it is published. I'm checking everything these days, make sure that I don't make any more mistakes. So let's go to the modules, and we'll go down to module 4. So module 3, module 4, and we see lab activity 9 that we worked on last time, and lab activity 4. They don't go in order in terms of the activities. They're published in a certain order in the lab manual, but we kind of jump around throughout the labs in them. So activity 4, and as I said, it's already published, writing names and formulas. And so we can pull it up and we can look at it. And this lab is a little bit different in that they use electronic configurations and introduce dot structures in order to talk about the valence electrons. And they have a way of writing those Lewis dot structures and those electron arrangements that is a little bit different than what we've done before. So we're gonna talk about how they're specifically writing these electron arrangements, what they call electron arrangements. And then they also go through the group numbers and the valence electrons for each group number and whether they lose or gain electrons. And we correlate that to the periodic table. So we'll look at that again. And they're using a system similar to what I use, where I call it balancing and I write out my little balancing formulas for my ionic charges. They're doing it with boxes where calcium being a 2+ is represented by a box which is twice as tall as a chloride, which is a 1-. And so it requires completing the box in order to make the compound. That's a good way to do it. It's a good visual representation. I think mathematically, the way I do it is relatively equivalent to that. This way, it's harder to make a mistake because you're balancing and filling out the box in order to make it right. They go through the old names and the new names. So for the transition metals, they talk about that. The polyatomics, they have the names and formulas. And then they go through some of these electron dot structures, which we will do as well, and we will detail those out and show you how to do those. And then it starts off with the electron arrangements and the loss or gain of electrons and then the name. So let's start our analysis there and let's go and bring in that periodic table into the notes and show what we can do with that periodic table and these electron arrangements and how they're showing these electron arrangements. Takes me a second to airdrop this in. Okay. So remember that when we start looking at what becomes a cation and what becomes an anion in the main group elements, the main things that we're looking at are these A values. The A values, the group numbers 1A, 2A, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. The A values tell us the number of valence electrons in that group. So that from the A values, we get the valence electrons. So it's a quick, easy way of looking to see what those A value or what those valence electrons are, first off. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is from these, we can also tell what the charge is going to be on an ion that resides in that location. So anything in group 1A is going to lose one electron and become a plus one cation. Everything in group 2A is going to become a plus two cation. And everything in group 3A is going to become a plus three. In group 4A, we reach sort of the middle, and these tend to share electrons more than they tend to make ions. On the opposite side, group 7A becomes a minus one cation. In 6A, they become a minus two. And in 5A, they become a minus three. And that's because it takes three electrons to get nitrogen from a nitrogen element to one, two, three electro isoelectronic with neon, its closest noble gas. And remember, they're all trying to fill out their number of valence electrons to become like the noble gases. So at the noble gases, they're not gaining or losing electrons either. In fact, they very rarely form compounds because they have an octet, they have a full set of electrons, and they neither need them, they don't want to lose them, and they don't want to gain them. So we leave the noble gases sort of out of our analysis when we're looking at things. Okay, and so let's start by taking and looking at an electronic configuration. And maybe I was looking at nitrogen. So let's take a look at nitrogen's electronic configuration. We'll come up here writing names and formulas, and we will do electronic configurations. Now, this is something that we did a while ago, but we know how to do. Nitrogen, when we look at it, we'll go back and we'll read it off the periodic table. This is period one, where hydrogen is, period two, and we're in period two. So we're going to fill all of period one. That's the one S's. We're going to fill the two S's, and then we'll be one, two, three into the P's. So our electronic configuration is going to be 1S2, 2S2, 2P3. And what they do within this lab is they call it, let's see what they call it. They call it an electron arrangement. I get the word right. They use, yes, they use an electron arrangement. So we have the element. We have the electronic configuration. And then we're going to have an electron arrangement. And this is the piece that they're looking for, or the way, at least, that they want us to write it. What we do is we take these and group them. Let's do it this way. Let's group these into blue and group these into red. In the electronic arrangement, what they do is they take each shell and they look at the number of electrons that are in each shell. And so this one is going to be a two for the two electrons, dash. And then we sum up all the electrons that are in here, two plus three, five electrons. And so this is a two dash five in the way that they want to do the electron arrangement. And when we take and we look at an element that becomes an ion. When it becomes an ion, the way we do the electronic configuration is we write it out in square brackets, 1s2, 2s2. This now, we're going to pick up three extra electrons beyond the three that we had. So we're going to go all the way to six electrons. And then we include the three minus on the outside so that we can distinguish that from neon's electron configuration. And I'll color these again. So let's style those in blue. And these in red. And so what we get is an electron arrangement, which is 2-8. And we've reached an octet, and it is this guy right here, which is telling us that we now have an octet. And it's an easy correlation or a helpful correlation to see that we are either going to 0 in this number or 8 in this number for almost every ion that we look at in the table. So let's take one of their examples. We'll bring their sheet in and look at how we're going to complete this. Oops, wrong button. That's going to take me astray. One more time, airdrop. And we'll bring in the whole sheet into Notability. Okay, and we'll go down and we'll look at where they want us to start completing this table. All the way down here. Electron dot structures. Using the example given, complete this table. And they give us some electronic configurations. And they're allowing us, interestingly, I think Krista modified this. So Krista probably modified this in order to include the electronic configuration itself rather than the electron arrangement. So the lab had been designed to do the electron arrangement. We can do both. We can put the electronic configuration in there and we can put the electron arrangement in there. And it helps to see the shells and how they're either filling or emptying, whether it's becoming a cation or an anion. And they have this idea of this electron dot structure. Let's take a second. We'll go back up to the notes and we'll look at that electron dot structure and what that is supposed to look at like as well. Let's include in our little table here, electron dot structure. There we go. My computer is flipping out all of a sudden. That was weird. I don't know why it decided to do that. Are you guys still seeing the screen share or did we lose the screen share? Because everything just rearranged on my screen, all my windows, we lost it. Okay, let me bring it back. That was a weird little glitch. I've never seen that glitch before. Okay, back on. All right, nice. Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know exactly what happened, but if I need to splice it back together in the video feed, then I will splice it back together. Apparently it says we're still recording, so I think we're okay. All right, the electron dot structure. I'm gonna do a little thing down here on electron dot structures. An electron dot structure is a way of taking an element and imagining that that element resides within a box. And what we do is we place two electrons on each side of the box. And if we do that, we get to 2, 4, 6, 8, 8 total electrons. These electrons that are out here are the valence electrons. And so if we're looking at an element and we're placing electrons around an element, what we do is we look at its group number, we figure out how many valence electrons it has, and then we place that number of dots out around the element. Now, we don't include the box, we just include the element symbol. And if it has two valence electrons, then what we do is we place those two valence electrons on opposite sides. If it has four valence electrons, we place them all individually, one on each side. We don't pair up the electrons unless we're forced to pair them up, similar to what we do when we fill an electron diagram And if we have redundant energy levels, we spread out the electrons because it takes pairing energy in order to pair those electrons. So we don't pair them unless we have to. So when we get to 5 electrons, that's the first time that we pair up a set of electrons. And it doesn't matter whether you pair them on the top, the left, the right, the bottom, doesn't matter where you pair them. The structures are all equivalent. It just matters that we keep them all separated until we have up to 5, and then we start pairing until we get up to 8. So if we go back and we look at how many valence electrons we have here, let's say it's group number. This is group 5A. That means that it has 5 valence electrons. And we can correlate that 5 valence electrons with the number that we're seeing here. And so that's our 5 valence electrons. And when we do its electron dot structure, it would be nitrogen, and it would have the 5 valence electrons, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that we would show there. When we get to a nitride, the nitride is going to be a 3-, and its dot structure is going to have all 8. So we're going to correlate it here with the 8 valence electrons, the 5 valence electrons. So we get all 8 electrons around the outside, and 3 of those electrons, when we look at them, and it doesn't matter which 3 we choose, 3 of those electrons are what are giving it the 3- charge, the 3 extra electrons that have been added into it. And they're also the number of electrons that are taking us from 5 to 8. And so they're just correlating here in many different ways, the number of valence electrons and how they are changing from the neutral element to the ion. And we can take, and we can do a cation in the same way. So let's look at a cation example and show how we would do that. So in a cation example, we're going to have its group number. We're going to have the element, electron config, and electron arrangement. And we'll also have the dot structure. So let's choose from this magnesium. Magnesium is a good one to do. Magnesium is in group 2A. We are element magnesium. Let's slide these all over so that it'll be an easier table to read. Our electronic configuration for magnesium, we can see it down there on the screen. 1s2, 2s2, 2p6, 3s2. So when we group this one and we write its electronic arrangement, following the same pattern that we did last time, I think I styled this in blue, in red, and let's style the last one in green. And the electronic arrangement is going to be 2-, we take all the electrons that are in red, 8-, all the electrons that are in green, 2. So it was a 2-8-2. And its electronic dot structure, when I draw it with 2 valence electrons, is going to be magnesium with 2 dots on it. When it goes in, it becomes an ion. We know that everything in group 2A loses 2 electrons, falling back to its closest noble gas. So it's going to fall back to the neon electronic configuration. And so it's going to become a magnesium, which is a 2+ ion. Its electronic configuration will fall back to 1s2, 2s2, 2p6. And then the 3 s's are now empty. So I'll include them, although you don't need to show them. We will distinguish it from neon by including it in square brackets and putting the charge in the upper right-hand corner. And its electronic arrangement then becomes 2-8. And if you want, you can include the zero. And it has fallen back to an electronic arrangement that has 8 valence electrons. Its dot structure, when we include it, most often it is done this way, where we say that this is magnesium now, that is a 2+, and we don't include any dots. Because it is 3s0. So there's no dots that we show on it. We've lost the 2 valence electrons and we leave it without any electrons, having lost those. So another option is you could put 8, but then 8 would be slightly misleading around the magnesium because you're looking at it and this is supposed to be a cation that has lost electrons. And so if we put 8 around it, it looks like it's gained them rather than lost them. And so we tend to fall back and not draw any electrons around it. Is that making sense? Being clear? Okay. Let's go and look at the table that we were supposed to complete. We'll do it without zooming through everything and look at another example that's here. So oxygen, what we can do is use the periodic table. We'll go and we'll find oxygen in the periodic table. Make sure we know where it is. Oxygen is here. It's in group 6A. And in terms of the number of protons that it has, it's got 8 protons. It's element number 8. So that's some of the information that we're going to need in order to complete our table. So let's go back and look. So oxygen, atomic number 8. Its electronic configuration is going to be 1s2, 2s2, 2p4. And its electron arrangement would be 2-6. And so we're correlating here. I think we can do it just by underlining the 2 and the 6, that we're grouping them together in that way. We're grouping them together by shell. Its electron dot structure is going to be an oxygen that is going to have the 6 valence electrons around it. So there's my 6 valence electrons around it, correlating by color that I'm choosing this number here, the valence number of electrons to include around as the dot structures. Now, what is it going to do? Is it going to lose or gain electrons in order to become an ion? So we're looking at what it takes for it to be able to become an ion. And we're trying to get up to 8, so we can see that this is going to gain 2 electrons in order to become an ion. So we're going to gain 2 electrons. Its electronic arrangement is going to become 2-8. We can correlate that by 1s2, 2s2, 2p6. Brackets around it, the 2 minus charge. We're correlating here that we have 8 electrons now. The 2 that were in the 1s. And its charge, when you add electrons, and this is the part that people tend to make a mistake on this chart when they do, when you add electrons, electrons are negatively charged. So if we add 2 electrons, its charge becomes 2-. Its symbol, O, 2-. And its ion name, when it becomes an ion, is oxide. We change the IDE ending. We change from oxygen to oxide, indicating that this is an anion. So there's an example of how we go through and complete that table. And so they want us to do that for a series of both cations and anions all the way through. And it's not too difficult to fill out that piece. All right, review the name of ion column above. What distinguishes the name of a metal cation from the name of the metal ion? Well, we've got a cation that's here where we name it by its elemental name, sodium. and we just include ion at the end. But an anion, we change its ending to IDE. So that's what we're looking for there. Don't forget to hit that. A lot of people miss that question because it's at the bottom of the table and they just run over it, skip it. But we're doing that question. Okay. Next, writing ionic formulas. Here, what they're doing is they are giving us the name of a formula or the name of an ionic compound, and we're supposed to give the positive, the negative ion, and then write the formulas. Everything that you guys have been doing already should allow you to do this fairly quickly. And I'm going to recommend, too, that you do this on separate sheets of paper in your balancing and using your balancing, unless you've gotten confident enough that you can do it just sitting here and putting them together. So magnesium, when we look at it, magnesium's in group 2A is a 2 plus cation. So we have the magnesium, fortunately, which we just did. So we know that this is a 2 plus. And we have the chloride, which is in 7A, becomes a 1 minus anion. So there's our 1 minus. We can go back and we can look at where chloride is located. So chloride is here. In group 7A, it's going to pick up one electron. And then when we put them together, I'm going to do my example up here. This is the way that I've been teaching to do it. This is the 2 plus, the chloride minus. And to balance them out, we simply draw a table. And we get the same number of negative charges as positive charges. And then we write that out, magnesium subscript 2 for the chloride. And so here it would be MgCl2. Okay, so you can go through and notice that all of these are all main group. There's no surprises here. So these are all main group cations and main group anions. There's no polyatomics or anything that are popping up just yet in that. So this table, fairly easy to go through and complete. Likewise, name the following ionic compounds. All of these are main group ionic compounds, similar to what we were doing before. And so if we were to name them, we name the cation first, in this case, sodium. And then we name the anion second, using its root, sulf, and then followed by the IDE ending for the anion, sulfide. Review the answers in problem 1 and 2 of exercise above. What do the subscripts represent? So here you can tell me what the subscripts mean. When we include a subscript in these, we're simply enumerating the number of each ion to make the formula electronically neutral so that we have the same number of cations as anions. Okay, ionic charges for transition metals. We know that the ionic charges for transition metals are different, that they have multiple charge states that they can have. And what we see here is that they are including for us the charge state based on the Roman numeral. And so you correlate that charge state with the 2 plus. That's almost too big a highlighter to hit what I want to hit. Shrink it down a little bit. All right, so we've got the 2, 3, 2, 2, 2. So those are going to tell us what our charge states are. For instance, when we go down into the iron, this is going to be Fe3 plus, and sulfide Si2 minus, which will allow us to make its formula correctly. Now, why don't we have Roman numerals in zinc and in silver? Well, the answer to that is that zinc and silver only have one charge state. They only have one charge state. They are exceptions. And because they're exceptions and they only have one charge state, we treat them like a main group metal. In treating them like a main group metal, we're saying that there's no need for a Roman numeral. But that means that you need to remember what their charge states are. So zinc is always a 2+, and silver is always a +1, and they don't change from that. So we need to remember that, that is an important component in looking at their names. Okay, now name the following ionic compounds. Here we're working backwards. And here I really suggest working on paper, because what you're going to do is you're going to take the compound and you're going to write it out and balance it and understand that we don't know what the charge state on the copper is, because copper can have multiple charge states. So we have no idea what that charge state is yet, but we know that the anions have fixed charge states. And because it has a fixed charge state, we can go back to the periodic table and we can look up where phosphorus is. And we can find that phosphorus is in the 5A, where they are all -3 anions. So phosphide is going to be a -3 anion, and it will never be anything different. That allows us to work from that point and to say that this is a 3-. That means that I have 3 negative charges. And because it is given to me by formula, it must be balanced already. So that means that there must be only 3 positive charges. And if I take the number of ions that I have, 3 coppers, and divide them into the number of charges, 3 divided into 3+ is going to equal +1. So each one of these coppers must be a single +1 copper. And so I am working backwards. I'm working from my known, figuring out what each thing is. And then I can name it appropriately. I can go through and say that this is copper, Roman numeral 1, and then I can name the anion phosphide. So I suggest working on paper on these as well in order to work backwards. Question, consider your answers in problems 1 and 2 of exercise C above. What do the Roman numerals in parentheses mean? I think we've got that dialed at this point so that we can see what those Roman numerals mean. Okay, polyatomic ions. This one, they are intending you to either know the polyatomic ions or to use the table that they give us at the beginning of the lab. I think it's here, where they list out common polyatomic ions, and they will use only those that are listed here in the lab in that bottom section. So you can just refer back to looking at these common polyatomic ions in order to complete this section. So let's see what they've got us doing. Lithium carbonate. Here, again, I suggest working on separate sheets of paper. Lithium is a group 1A. So lithium is going to be a +1. Carbonate is a CO subscript 3, 2-. And what I like to do again is the same skill that we've been doing, lithium carbonate, and balancing out by charge to get the same number of cations and anions. And then we can write its formula, lithium subscript 2, carbonate. Notice that I didn't require a parentheses around the carbonate because there's only one carbonate. If there were 2 carbonates, I would need to include a parentheses around the second one. Perhaps we can do one more example to show. Let's say that we were doing a compound between magnesium, which is a 2+, and bicarbonate, which is HCO3-. Here, what I would need to do is I would need to have 2 of the bicarbonates to give me a 2- to match my 2+. And when I write its formula would be written mg parentheses h CO3 close parens 2. And that would be magnesium carbonate. So parentheses are required every time there is more than one polyatomic. We need to include them in parentheses and put the subscript on the outside. Name the following ionic compounds. Notice here that some of these are main group, some of these are transition metals. So the ones that are transition metals, copper, iron, those transition metals are going to require require Roman numerals or the old name style. So we need to be careful with those transition metals. Okay. So if we're naming a main group, we would just name it with its name, calcium. And then we name the polyatomic, in that case, sulfate. 8 having more oxygen, 8 having less. Remembering that SO4 2 minus, this is the sulfate with more oxygens. SO3 2 minus, this is the sulfite with less oxygens. So that we can sort of remember that nomenclature style that's there. In order to determine what the charge on the metal is, we will have to work backwards. Maybe this is a good one to work backwards. Let's do the iron one really quick. So working backwards, I have one iron and I have two bicarbonates or hydrogen carbonate. These guys are fixed charge state. The polyatomics do not change in what their charge state is. So polyatomics are fixed just like main group anions. All of the anions are fixed in their charge states. So I work backwards from that. That tells me that I have 2 minus. And that means that my formula, because they gave me a balanced formula, must be balanced. I must have 2 positives. And that then tells me what my iron is, that this is the 2 plus iron. And so the name of this is going to be iron, Roman numeral 2. And then I name the bicarbonate . Okay, consider all of the nomenclature exercises in B, C, and D. What are the rules for correct placement of parentheses in the naming and writing of chemical formulas in ionic compounds? And here I'll give you 2 examples. We can use the iron, Roman numeral 2, bicarbonate. In the naming and writing. And the other place where I find that I use the correct placement of parentheses is in something like Fe, well, we'll do the same one, bicarbonate, HCO3 subscript 2. So they're asking me in naming, where do I use parentheses? And in writing formulas, where do I use parentheses? And so that's what they're asking you to distinguish, is those 2 cases of where parentheses are used. Lewis dot structures of atoms and molecules. Here, they're simply asking us to go through and to look at the periodic table, see how many valence dots the element is supposed to have, and then write the element with the correct number of valence dots. So here, what we can do is we can go back to the periodic table, we'll look up carbon. Carbon is in group 4a. That means that it's going to have 4 valence electrons. So with 4 valence electrons, when I do its Lewis dot, I put 4 valence electrons around the element and I'm simply done. So I'm looking at its A group value. It is in carbon is in 4A. That means that it's got four valence electrons, and that's the four valence electrons that I place around it. Easy enough to do. Electron dot formulas of covalent compounds. This is a little bit more difficult. Here, what we're doing is we're making not ionic compounds, but covalent compounds. So these were incovalent. And here, what they want us to do, let's take SBr here, for example, and we'll go and do that one on a separate sheet of paper. So let me include we're going to put a note that this is on page 15 of the notes. And what it is they're wanting us to do here. So I think that we're doing, what was it? SBr2. Okay, so what I do first is I look at each element individually. I find its group number and how many valence electrons it has. For sulfur, sulfur is in group 6A. It is the same as oxygen. It has six valence electrons. And bromide is in 7A. It has seven valence electrons. So six and seven. Let's even drop this down a little bit. We'll say that this is in 6A, 7A, six valence electrons, seven valence electrons. And again, the placing of the dots is not super critical. There are some common ways in which we do them, some accepted ways, or I should say traditional ways in which we do them. So if we have one dot, two dots, three, four, five, I like to put the pair at the top. Six, we do the pair top and bottom. Seven, we do the single on the right, and we do them that way. So there's an example of how we traditionally do them. But I said, like I said, there's no right or wrong in terms of where the pairs go, if they go on the left or the right versus the top and the bottom. Really doesn't make that much difference. And then what we're doing is we're taking these and we're combining them. Let's take and color these and style the sulfur into red. And let's style the bromide into blue. So what we do is we take, now when we make the formula, we put the first element that they are showing as being central. So this element, the first element, and so we're going to draw that element in the center of what it is that we're about to draw. And then what we do is we take the bromide and we write the bromide next to it where the single electrons are, and we pair up the single electron, and then we give the bromine the rest of its electrons. And we do the same on the other side, and we pair up the rest of the electrons. Now notice what happened is by taking the single electron from the bromide and the single electron from the sulfur, we made an electron pair. And that's what we are attempting to do, is we are attempting to pair the electrons. To make a covalent bond. Now, this is what is called a Lewis dot structure. But we take this and we typically translate this later, not in this lab. I don't think we do it in this lab, but at a later date, we translate this into what is called a Lewis structure rather than the Lewis dot structure. We drop out the name dot. A Lewis structure, what we do is we take and we write the same thing that we have done, except for where electrons are being shared like this, we represent that sharing with a bond. And the bond we draw as a horizontal line. So lone pairs are displayed and the sulfur, its lone pairs are displayed. But where I have the sharing of two electrons, I represent that sharing of two electrons with a line that represents the sharing of the two electrons. And so that represents the chemical bond. Between the elements. So that's what I'm looking to do there in terms of the Lewis dots and how they want me to put this together. So when I go back now to where they're asking me to do the sulfur and bromide, we've done this example, so we can include this example in here that I'm getting the sulfur. And then I'm adding in the bromide or the bromine because it's not an anion. However, we will change its name to represent that. And again, when it's all in black, there's a little bit of mystery of where the electrons came, whose electrons are whose. So sometimes I find that it is advantageous to style them to see that each is coming in with their valence electrons. And now we can clearly see how this structure was arrived at and where all the valence electrons came from. And so we can even go over here and we can say, all right, this guy has 6 valence electrons and this guy has 7 valence electrons. And they're mapping out in that way. And the name, when we name it, remember that we're using the binary covalent nomenclature for molecular compounds. So we switch nomenclature styles. Binary covalent nomenclature. That's the different style of nomenclature, where the first element is named by its elemental name. And the second is named with a prefix that tells me how many, and then ends in an IDE. So we have element name. We have prefix that tells me how many. We have element name followed by IDE. Always IDE in the ending. Okay, so there's a little reminder on the binary covalent nomenclature in order to fill that out. Okay, last page on this worksheet. Questions and problems. Write the correct formulas for the following ions. If we look at the ion names here, sodium, chloride, oxide, calcium, sulfate, they bolded the ATE. So that is telling us that that's a polyatomic. So we need to be careful here that this one is polyatomic. and they're giving us an iron, they're giving us a transition metal with its Roman numeral. So we need to watch that Roman numeral in terms of its charge state, being careful. Write the correct names of the following compounds. Here they're giving us all different sorts of compounds, and we need to be very careful what sort of compound it is so that we name it correctly. Some of these, like this one, is binary covalent. Some of them have transition metals. And then some of them have polyatomics. And another one here that's binary covalent. Okay, let's take a second and ask, how do we find something that is binary covalent from something that is ionic? And maybe what I should do is, in my notes, not worry about transition metal or polyatomic, but binary covalent. How do I find those things that are binary covalent versus something which is just ionic? Ionic. What is it that I'm looking for? What is my key thing that I'm trying to key into to recognize something that is ionic from something that is binary covalent? Any ideas? I'm looking for the metals. I'm looking to see, is there a metal that is in this thing? And if there is a metal, then it's ionic. And if there is no metal, then it's binary covalent. So picking out the metals, and I want to use two different colors for metals. Let's use, for main group metals, let's use red. And actually there are no main group metals in here. They're all transition metals. So we can just hit it this way. Metal. Oh, there's a main group. Metal, 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 and metal. Those things that have no metals, those are going to be my binary covalent. So I'm keying into the metal in terms of understanding how to name it and which nomenclature system I use to name it. So that's an important aspect in terms of looking at that. And what I would also say here is that be careful where there are transition metals. Because the transition metals are going to need to distinguish its charge state in the name. And silver is a transition metal, but that one's like main group. And over here, we had another main group aluminum. Okay, so there's some differences there. Identify the following compounds as ionic or covalent and write the corresponding molecular formula. How do we do that? How do we recognize ionic versus covalent? It's exactly what we did just up here above. Write the correct names and formulas for the compounds. It is the same as distinguishing ionic versus binary covalent. So that covalent component, again, here in this section, we're looking for the presence of a metal. When we see a metal indicates ionic. So metal equals ionic. No metal equals covalent. And that's how we're distinguishing. So watch the metals. Your friend wants to know what the formula FeSO4 on her vitamin bottle means and what the name of this ingredient is. Help her understand the meaning of the symbols and the correct name associated with this formula, i.e. write a brief answer to her question. I think that's fairly self-explanatory. we're breaking down and we're naming this, and we're explaining what the formula means and how many of each ion type there are that are in that formula. So I think you guys can handle that question. And that brings us to the end of the session. All right, we've got through activity four, names and formulas. Maggie, Kimberly, any questions that came up during going through this lab exercise? Anything relative to this? All right, so what I'm gonna do, I think, is I'm going to cut the video and we'll stop the video here. And if there's any questions for anything else that you guys would like to work with in the class, we've got a little bit of time. I can stay online and we can deal with those questions separate from the feed here. So let me go ahead and stop the video, if I can figure out how to stop it.